everyone for sticking to the time. We have now a session where we will appreciate and welcome the inputs or the questions rather from the community. Can I just say that this is now a full-scale public hearing, of course, and we gladly afford you the opportunity to partake in the session. Can I ask members that will now partake in the session to please refer to the page numbers to make it easy to refer to? And then I think I will allow it go on all the parts. You can either decide, I'm sure you formulated your question on the part of the section within the report. So you can either refer to the section in the report and the page within the report. Are we clear on that? So,
sir? I think as much as I appreciate the fact that you're explaining the thesis to us, but I think you must also understand that there are all value issues in our community that we would also like to raise up. So as much as we are engaging with the annual report, I think we should also be afforded an opportunity to raise these issues that are pressing in our community when it comes to the Department of Health as well. And if we want to be technical in terms of referring, we can do that to certain cases or sections of this annual report. But I think I just want to be clear, I stand here to raise the issue that has affected my community and continues to affect my community. And I would like the opportunity to address that issue. So I'm asking you, with the utmost respect, for the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, sir. I also just wish to state the following that the purpose of the session is for us to reflect on the 2018-2019 period. That is the review process that we are currently dealing with. And I do understand and I respect fully the fact that, yes, there are many issues, and one can appreciate also that the department has mentioned it various times this morning that as much has been done, there are challenges within the department for years, and therefore I accept and I acknowledge that there are certain burning issues within our communities as well, and I respect that, and thank you for coming here to raise that. But I think for the sake of progress, we need to refer to the business of the day. What I would suggest that you do is that you are more than welcome to direct any questions, any issues to this committee that will be dealt with them accordingly. If you have a question based on the review, I will allow you to do so. If you need an example within your community that you wish to refer to for us to better understand, I will also allow you to do that. So that we just need to stick to the business of the day as well. But I'm not insensitive to what you are raised, but let's manage it in that manner. Member Allen, anything from the group?
No, I'm covered by the comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, can I have an indication from the community side? Yeah. Ma'am, can then I just ask you to state your name and the organization you represent? Thank you.
I'm Charles Kiwis, and I'm from the State Metropolitan Art Forum. I've got quite a number of questions. On page 10, I just need to understand from paragraph 8, I need to understand the COPC service delivery model. How does that relate to community-based services that are currently rendered through the department, and the 20 learning sites, where in the province are these sites, and are there any documentation on how these sites were identified, by whom and for whom? On page 12.
Excuse me, sorry for interrupting you, Ms. Kivik. Can I ask you, since you mentioned that you have quite a few questions, can I then ask you, to ask you questions that are relevant to pages 10 and 51 now.
Okay. That is what I'm going to do. So I'm going to ask my questions under page 51 and then I will ask my other questions under the next question. So on page 12, the 54% of senior management positions are held by female. Do we have an indication of the positions held by senior management? Is a decision-making position, or is it a position where the management still needs to toe the line within the department? Because sometimes we see, and especially and the middle population, especially on night using our facilities, when a decision needs to be made, a decision cannot be made because the senior manager doesn't have that authority and its impact on service delivery. And my next question is on page 15. And the sales and capital assets, was it a tender process? Was it auction? How do the department have a sale for government property if it's not through an auction process? Then on page 17, in the previous annual report process, the same topic came to a hand, and that was the WCRC, and I see the department has extended the contract with another year. And my question to the department is, if we knew in the previous annual report that the contract was going to come to an end, did we not have enough time to put new measures in place to ensure that the new process is done. Then on page 19, and this question is specifically around the Delahar site. Is there progress on the site? If we see that we are here later, and what is the community role in that? And then also on page 19, under adolescent projects in the Drakenstein, if the adolescent healthcare for rural health was funded by the global fund, and the global fund comes to an end, how does this impact our adolescent services? And is there an alternative way of care for adolescents in the rural communities? Then on page 20, also under rural health, I've asked that question, so I'm not going to repeat that question. Then my other question is, the process around cataract removal and all of that, is it only a PPP process, or is there a package of care for our rural communities on essential services, even though cataracts are sometimes not seen as essential service, yet for people with diabetes it is? And then my last question on page 23, the first paragraph around mortality and all of that, my concern or the question I have for the department, an unqualified audit and a qualified audit a year later, has the department really addressed the issues around, if the department speaks about the transformation journey, what does transformation, how does transformation relate to community involvement. Because the other questions I have is under the other pages, but under page 23, the second paragraph where the department speaks about and the journey that they started. So does this journey of the department have community involvement inclusive in it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
I am Sarah Lewis from the UN National. I will be concerned, it's on page 10, paragraph 1, where it is saying that there is going to be a cut of budget because the department has said that there's going to be a failure. I want to know if that is the reason, what is going to happen regarding the money that is going to be cut, and where we as a community already suffer with the shortage of seven specific hydrocarbons like endorphine, acid like lancelot, titanate for elderly people. It's already out of stock for more than 2 months, so I want to know what is going to happen regarding those issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. I also want to refer to the MEC's input to the Norwegian Page 10. And she refers to budget cuts. And I'm trying to understand the different departments of health respecting budget cuts or budget constraints. How is it that the department closes the outbreak day hospital, leases another property, shuttles people on a daily basis from outbreak to planting, and yet they say that there isn't enough money so that they sustain the one to challenge. Yet they take the decision to operate in that particular manner. Then on page 13, on the second paragraph, is reference making to reference made to governing buying the agencies. Now the reality is, in taking the decision to close our healthcare facility in Alfred, we weren't consulted. The decision was taken, and after the fact, we had to make contact with the department of health and the community to ensure. Now, coming back to the issue of French care, the community is considering and is actually going to seriously. Actually in the process of joining up legal spaces. So if the department doesn't have funding, why does it now want to be taken to court to ensure that the hospital and outbreak is open and fully operational? Because if our government doesn't have money, they shouldn't want to go to court to provide services. There are constitutions enshrined for us as our Africans to have our constitutional rights. Access to healthcare, dignity, privacy, and the right to life, which is being violated by the force of children. So I think for me, I just want to say that the reality is all we want is the community, we want that facility to be open, and the department, as much as you're saying, Jefferson, and say that, that this question should be forwarded to you, the department is disingenuous when it comes to reforming. We're still working on a direct answer from the department as to whether or not the facility is going to remain open, because we want it to be open and fully operational. We were told that we were going to receive a response when we said last week. We still haven't received the response. And the only time we report on the response is when we involve the Human Rights Commission. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay.
I want to carry what you do with my son, the shoulder.
Oh, would you do the mic, please, ma'am?
Once again, Charlotte, this is from David from the community of Mr. Terrafier. I want to refer to page 176, dismissal and misconduct. My question would be, how many of those are state sealed? I'm asking this question specifically because 2 years ago, I was dismissed. It was an embarrassment in the Western sect. I felt intimidated and I felt it was victimization in the sense that how do you just lift a person? I'm a good nurse, and I'm proudly saying I am a good nurse. Before I became a nurse, I did homeless people and it took out women. Then after I became a HIV counselor for sustained life extension, and then after I went to a college, private college, and I became a staff nurse. I got my education at the age of 46 years old. I didn't have, but I studied, and yes, I became, after that, my assistant and total clinic, I can say it in that way. My question would be, how do you, the nurse and nurse, that worked 20 years with a state skill, ICU trained, running a ward for more of about 8 years, and you dismiss a person for wearing a gilet, if those of people that sit here, parliamentary officials, they don't know what is a gilet, it is a lady group top with two pockets in that you wear over your uniform. And that is to protect your private part and sorry, your private behind. As I can say to Afrikaans, our fire phones is we wake up only down, we protect ourselves now. A 100 summer like the last night, if you are this nurses, you contribute towards unemployment. And if the government of the Western Cape, that is the majority party, is so concerned about unemployment, then I would love the minister to say, how did the minister intervene? Because we did have a meeting with the minister, whereby the minister said, it is a very other salary labor force. I want to say to the minister, it is the salary labor force because the lawyer asked me 1,500 hands for a year. Now, an unemployment, a person that is unemployed, don't have that money. The nurse, the sister, that is so highly trained. She was, Sister de Villiers, let me put a name that you can know. She's Sister de Villiers, so highly trained. And for losing your job and making people in the Western Cape unemployed because of the delay. Just thereafter, after we fought, we lost our faces to the bargaining council, wherever, but the nurses in the Western Cape, I can say to the minister now today, where Mrs. Franklin Weissman is working, everybody is wearing a gilet. How will the minister intervene in our matter, the efficiency? As I rightly say, the minister said to me, in the meeting, I left the bargaining council, how will the minister intervene? Did the minister speak to Sister Franklin Bartman to not in future dismiss people for such petty things? If I never gave a person wrong injection, never wrong medication, my patient is my priority. I became a nurse because I wanted to contribute towards a government. I can't change the world, but I made a difference. I could make a difference. So that's the question I want to raise.
Peterson Davis, I have great respect and for what you are conveying to us. Can I just caution you to show of hands there and also direct to me and not directly to the minister? And I think what you want to know from the page that you refer to is dismissals in general. How does the department deal with those? Because I'm not sure whether the department is the expert today in the do they have all the information pertaining to the cases that you mentioned? Should they not, we can always recommend or you can direct your direct inquiry to the committee. So we don't expect you to have all the details pertaining to the case on the table here today. But thank you very much. Hello, next to.
My name is Ait Tavire from Musa, Cape Warren. I wish to ask a question on page 34, about health service. Previously, we used to have a good service for healthcare. My question is back to the students. When is the government going to extend that rural health service train to Robotin, SN, and other rural small and border down, you mentioned corporate work, you get paid. No. Now, is it possible that you can extend to, because we find the people in Korean, poor communities that can get better access to the system. And they can explain. Lastly, in between the interest in my music, the challenge of people at the digital closet protocol. Then after protocol, there are no services in the And the system from Solestima to the Roosters then came. Then even the ambulance system, the ambulance is available nearby Solestima. The phone in the town just can take some time to reach the improvement.
Thank you very much, sir. I think the second question captures, the first one captures it well in terms of the services in the rural areas. Thank you. Next, ma'am, any questions from your side? No, thank you. The department, Minister HOD, the floor are now open for response. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the committee members for the questions. One really appreciates the fact that health is seen as I think owned also by the community, hence the previous comments that we've made also to the department that we need to actually strengthen this relationship. The third question was on COPC, which is community-oriented primary care, and what is its relation to community-based services? And do we have facilities where the learning sites are? So the member is absolutely correct. There are 19 learning sites, 4 of which is in the metropole, and 15 in the rural areas. The selection has largely been on where are the large pockets of population in the rural areas, and perhaps the metro team can advise how the metro selection has happened. So these are critical learning sites where community-oriented primary care means that in a particular geographic area where population lives, we look at who are all the people living in that area, who are all the providers, both public and private and non-state, like NGOs, and then also up to a clinic and up to ultimately to a district hospital along the referral chain. So that primary care is a change of focus on making sure that we penetrate into people's homes, that our service extends there, that we can prevent and also support families and patients in the settings where they live. So clearly the question was, I understood that, so community-based services are integrally part of the community-based primary care, to make sure that we are, that the system then penetrates into people's homes. And what it found is that the COPC is not only about health. What it found is that those community health workers very often find a child of school going age, not going to school, because the child doesn't have an ID. And then that community health worker will facilitate the process to make sure that the child gets an ID and the child can go to school. And there are other aspects related to that. So clearly it is a system that's extending beyond health, because we know if a child doesn't go to school, a child ultimately will not be able to reach its full potential as a citizen of the country. So,
I think the question was also, do we have any technical reports? We do have a technical report for the rural distribution of English in South and rural and four in the metro, so that's a technical chance. As a management team, we are currently reflecting on the learning of 16 sites in rural and 4 sites in metro. One of the key things of this is the essence is to connect community-based services with facility-based services. That's the essence. So you have a primary care facility and you have community-based services, and the issue is how does together better to get better outcomes for the population. I think the key question that has been posed, which is something that comes back to your further question, is what is the role of community participation in that? But that would be quite an important element. And a lot of what the reflection is, there needs to be a deliberation of how better to land some of the learning by looking at community engagement in terms of those local kind of relevant areas, but the aspect of the report that actually reflects on the lessons learned in at the training practice.
Thank you very much. I think Dr. Kluti also touched on the issue of our commitment to community involvement and community interventions and working together. There are different ways by which we are approaching that. We are always encouraging that we can't demonstrate the social community, but how is the best way of that engagement, and we will talk about that later on. The question was on page 12, on the 54% of the management that is of females, to what extent are they in decision-making positions? So the 65 senior management service individuals in our department carry the whole responsibility for the 32,000 staff members, and they also look at the population that we do serve. So for you to be able to reach the point of being an SMS member or the director, there are particular requirements of that job. It is about decision making, it is about authority, it is about having delegations on finances and on people and on services. So those are all decision making. It's not only females, everybody in those positions. There's a requirement when the post is advertised, they explicitly set what experiences are we looking for, what qualifications are we looking for, and what is the job in town. The particular example you used about hospitals and fostering, that is at a different level, and that is not this isn't just going to sound directly as a decision. That is with the hospital, the decentralized, the condition positions like those positions. Then there was a question on page 15 about sales and capital assets. So perhaps Mr. Kelly can help us there. This is usually a process, this is more amount of money, but the other process when you've got obsolete stuff, I would be doing that.
Thank you. So there are governance structures throughout the system. They generally call disposal committees, and sales of assets are generally referred to disposal committees. There are different methodologies of disposing of assets. Auctioning is one of those. So that deals with that. And then, if I may, there was another question about the Western Cape Rehab Centre. So it's a fairly complicated PPP arrangement, which has been serving the department probably for about 15 years now. We are in the process of awarding to a research provider that will come in, I think effectively 1/8 of next year. So we're quite far down the line there.
Just to add on that point, we started with the new tender process 18 months before it expired due to the complicatedness of the matter and a lot of the thinking that had to go in. We realized in this quality of self-spread to make it as good a system as it can be. So we did actually extend that one, but we did start 18 months before. As far as the Ballard site is concerned, that question is linked to Tygerberg Hospital and the planned new type of regional hospital that will be based in Ballard. So clearly the site has been identified in collaboration with the settlements, where there's a lot of human settlement development, and they then allowed us to have space, because we need quite a large area for hospitals, and it had to be close to the training institution as well. So the site in the metro is not really available, and we were very grateful to have access to that site. So clearly, I don't know.
Yeah, the process at the moment is that last year the human settlement department has worked on what we call the bus development, where they put the electricity and the sewage and the water connection that we should be required to the hospital. And from our side, we submitted the business case to the national department. That was approved, and now we are working on the quality of the clinic
question was about how are the community involved in that process, and I think that the word that really struck is to indicate that plan, the plan to have a regional hospital has always been part of the Heidelberg Hospital Council's board conversations. In that sense, the issue was what is the best place to put that going forward. So clearly it might not have been ideal, but having such a very really often The other point I want to make is that the quick question was about patronizing on the Glockenstein and the youth, the global fund coming to an end.
Thank you. So, Chairperson, I'm personally involved with them. And in Glockenstein, you might be familiar, completely might be familiar that we're doing what is called the Whole of Society Learning Science Intervention. The grant that was paid from the Global Fund came to the end in March. Was specifically to be in Mpukweni to go to two high schools and to look at increased HIV testing in that specific, the two high schools and with the communities and the youth in that area. So a lot of the work that was done was actually to mobilize people to become involved with HIV testing, knowing their status, and for youth and community structures with the council and everybody, councillors, everybody involved. I'm glad to say that the money has stopped, but the activities have not stopped. So the activities are being absorbed into the broader youth development strategy for that area. And I can say that as recent as last week, the small team that's from all the government departments that work in the Glockenstein actually had a visit to a youth development center in Mpukweni to look at what to bring all of those activities together. So there's lots of almost leveraging of the relationship between different government departments to pick up the resources that is part of the deal. That's how exciting I think this work will be developed in the
end. Thank you, Lindy. There was a question about catch-up removal and whether it's part of the defined package in the rural areas. So clearly, there is a defined package of services that is provided, and then depending on the complexity of procedure that must be done or the more specialty required that happens at a more centralized place. So cataract removal happens in the rural areas, in various hospitals. Definitely I think in that hospital and then also in Far Hospital and then Heidelberg Hospital, etc. But it doesn't happen at the clinic level. It is not proceeding when you do at the clinic level or at a small facility where you go there, because it's quite the anesthetics, the local anesthetics is quite specialized. You don't want to injure the eye. So that is a specialized capacity, but we do have, every year we make sure that we extend our ability to do cataract surgery, and we also link that to the Mandela Day initiative to make sure that we get more people on the waiting list to get their cataract surgeries to take place. So it is available, but really often because of the complexity of the case, patients have to be transported for that particular service. Then there was a question about 23 about the journey of the department the fact that we've got the lowest infant mortality rate and our positive transformation and the fact that we've got the unqualified audit doesn't relate to community involvement. It's quite a complex question. But the critical point here is that we have got a transformation journey. The reason why we call it the transformation journey is that we've realized for us just to absorb more pressures or more shocks to our system, we actually can't just absorb and adapt all the time. We actually have to transform completely. And that is a long journey. And we are in our third year of looking at how can we reorganize our complete management and administration system to allow more funds to go to the services and to be able to make sure that we are more efficient and aligned. So that means a 3-year journey and it will still continue. Part of the transformation is also to look at service transformation. And one of the members I picked up with HRC, that's part of our service transformation. How do we make sure that your community, our communities, and the households and the neighborhoods that we serve, to make sure that we do have access to that. But also there's a regular session to be spoken about more than just our society approach, and our society includes community members. So all the NGOs, all the statutory bodies, all the other participants in the community settings that participate in health. So clearly that are still part of our learning. How do we improve on that aspect? And we recognize that is an area for us to do work. the allocation to the department is now smaller than the allocation of the previous year. And that means that at the national level, the amount of money that comes from the province is reduced. So the province has less money to give to the department. And the department has taken into competition what are the priorities and how to make sure that we spend that money in the best interest of our communities. So that funding is what is allocated to the province. It's critically the issue that we have to deal with at very different conversations. Then the question when it comes to talk about medication is out of stock. And we have to recognize that the national tenders for certain medications, and these are very often chronic conditions, psychiatric conditions, family planning, there has been the national treasury handled the tender, and now it is with the national health. There was a hiccup, and we are unfortunately on the receiving end. So what we do is that as soon as we get any medication through the system that national is working with us, we redistribute that as best as possible so that nobody runs out of medication. And we communicate to the public on a regular basis. Very often you get only 2 months, 2 weeks medication, or just 1 week, or you get a pink tablet, last time you get a yellow tablet, and that is unfortunately the reality that we're working with. But we really take this very seriously and very responsible way by which we then make sure that the medication do reach our patients.
Chairperson, just to add, I referred earlier to the senior management committee that I chair. One of the things that we reflected on last week is the marker that we set, and that is how many items is on stock out at our central medical depot. We have a depot from which we distribute essential medication. That item is exceedingly high. It's up to the 80s, it's about 80 items on stock. We are not concerned about the number of items, but we are concerned about the types of things that's included in that number. Like essential application medication, like family planning, and all of those kinds of things. So for us, it is really about an essential form to make sure that all the systems work, that essential medication does not run out of stock. So it's really about going in, understanding these tenders, managing it on a month-by-month basis to make sure that essential items another stock. But that is going to be something that we're going to be tracking and managing from the oversight perspective of the senior managers in the
department. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then the question from the colleague in our vote. Thank you very much for those questions. It was also good to meet you today. The question is that in the outside area and in our vote, there's been there's a lot of activities in the community. The member has asked what we are appreciative of is that the unrest that there has been in Harvard was never targeted against Harvard. It was about aspects in the community. What happened though is that unrest, that tension in the community directly affects staff. And how do we deal, and what is the priorities that we put to the department? So we've explicitly stated that our staff well-being is our highest priority. And we need to put measures in place that our staff can work in environments where they feel that they are safe and that they are not exposed to aspects that make their work experience very negatively, and then we need to give more support and some of them actually threaten to resign. So the aspect of us to move money from one place to another is based on our priority. And if it means that we invest in one place, then we take that decision. In Harbour, we took a decision to invest in the Harbour area due to the risk to the staff and also the needs of the community. So, and what I would also like to point is that we have the levels of delegation in the department, and levels of authority, and also economy. So not all decisions are taken by me. Not all decisions are taken by the community. Not all decisions are taken by the local area. It will depend on the level of authority and accountability that's required for the decision. So in this case, there is a local substructure director, and there's also a local sub-district manager in that space that also have the authority to take decisions. are really aware of the uncertainty, and particularly in downward area, particularly facility had to close 10 times over the past 24 months, and our staff were very concerned about it. In the previous 2018-19 period, we did indicate that that has been reversed and a priority for
the future. Excuse me, Doctor, can you please ask yourself just respect each other on the floor? I think I grant you your opportunity. Can you please grant the department the opportunity?
So as part of the 2019 plan going forward, this is one of the priorities. So in the halfway area, there's first the complete replacement of both of the community medicals towards the new community day center. We've identified the site of our engagement with the civil sector. But then what are the steps that we take to make sure that the service remain accessible and our staff work in space where they feel that their safety is not at risk, and they don't feel the stress of the environment that they're working. So those are the considerations that we have, and in the 2019 process going forward, that will be the engagements that we will have. And I know that there have been engagements with the community, the reception, the personal, etc. And that will go forward. That is a commitment from us as a department. Honourable Chair, you discussed the issue of labour issues in this meeting, and I would like to support you that wherever, as a department, we follow due process, and we are audited by the Department of Public Service and Administration. We also have the Public Service Commission that come in to check with our HR processes and when we've got any cases of disciplinary action, etc., whether we follow the due process. And to what extent are we true to the rules that are there. I would agree that the Europe entertain particular issues here because the full picture and the full context might not be available. But clearly the process of fairness to our staff is there. We work with our unions. I also work with the members of unions that are their representatives. So these things happen, and from our perspective, we are actually very proud, and we've received recognition from the Public Service Commission in the processes and the procedures that we do put in place for labour relations management, but also if there are disciplinary processes, whether we are systematic to follow the rules. So just a general response and analogy. Then there was a question about the Fellow Pepper train. Now the Fellow Pepper train is a service from Transnet. So it's actually a wonderful initiative that Transnet has to use one of their trains to move through the country and bring healthcare services closer to the community. So we work very closely with them. So wherever their stations are that they stop, and they also send registered stations of population size, etc. And then we are to get people from the public to attend and visit and be there, and they do brilliant work. I fully agree with the question that came through. We know the issues of Robertson and Ashton, so you can put it through Transnet to see that they can put in, but obviously they've got a period of time, they've got so many places where the train stops, but we can pick that up. We took our decision, but we can take it afterwards. Then the question was also about Nicholas Wenny Clinic, and most services are 4 o'clock. And I'm sure if one goes to many communities in our province, you will find the same reality, that the clinics close at 4 o'clock. So we try from certain places, try to see, can we extend, say, one evening a week a bit longer, or one evening per month, or whatever, to see to what extent we can accommodate the public, but it depends on local context. And we recognize the issue of distance and ambulance availability. So clearly that is the reality, that the services are, although the previous point was made in 91% of the cases, the facilities available within 30 minutes walking. And so clearly the fact that the clinic closes at 4 p.m. is one of our realities, and we are consistently working towards how can you actually extend. But what we do is that we've got the homeless carers that are available in communities that go into homes, that we offer access as the extension of the department. They can during daytime and also be very often
part, starting from the last one for failure there. As you know, that besides the Gustav Hospital, which is a level 2, where the service is also the part of the overhead. But it also has to operate like a level 1, which creates too much pressure. But in addition to that, as you are aware, that you have got 7 main clinics, 4 satellite and 4 mobile, I mean 4 main clinics and also 4 satellites, and then within those satellites you have got the health post. True indeed, there are challenges because there's more than 300 farms in that area, and previously you find that you could be able to put more stuff during the seasonal time, and correctly Seropeka used to assist us, but because of the rail infrastructure, actually the same thing, the central part of the rail infrastructure, so they only go to the Swallow Dam, this area, Mosselbach, Swartland, and the Joel for that. And Philistrelli, I've been there before. The issue, which is you are correct, the issue of not having a 24, the issue that they didn't want to take ambulance on site, but also the issue of the waiting area once they are waiting so that they could have a specialist during the week. I think the main thing to talk about is the housing development, huge housing development that is upcoming on site. Hence, people will be talking about that. Now, the problem or the challenges we have is that if we were going to have more resources, the reason that I'm entertaining the classmates is because, at least with the metro, they are almost in our offices. So that's why we find that when the questions are about the rural, which is true, when the questions are about the rural, those who are happy that they have a fire must give a lot of information around that. So the challenges we have is about, if we start not looking, what is the challenge related to that, for the Salt River, it might be, at least things might be far better now compared to. But if you look at the development side, now people no longer go when it's seasonal, like they go to, if let's say they're done with the table bridge and then they go to the food truck on the other side, they remain there. And hence we find that now what we have to do is about where we plan according to where the population is increased, and then we have got more resources. But the first thing is prioritization, the extension of the clinic. I think probably when I was there, they're already in the pipeline in terms of doing such. In the issue of the MP Israeli is there, and every part is there. Every part goes to a Somerset Street clinic. What is the pink clinic? Somerset Street. They go to the pink clinic. The first thing was the in-house. They go to that clinic there, which is a seal. I'm not sure how it is, old building and whatever. But the issue that even the travel website, if there was not the Stellenbosch, Uganda, in that area, but we know that the issue there is a crime. Even when we started there, the mobile there, we had to stop because issue of the state, crime, police, and whatever, all of those. So now the priority is about how do we ensure that every plant is got a clinic, because it's quite far. Versus B, the administration where they do have the clinic, three times a week, there's a doctor that goes there, and also we've got the CDC, anyway, not a clinic for individuals. So, although it's the second heaviest when it comes to the workload, but the full package is there. And then after hours, of course, they do go to the Busan Hospital, but if you look at the distance from the Airbnb park and also from the administration when it goes there. Yes, indeed, ideally, we might have to have a mobile when this new site, the housing now has been there, so that we have a mobile that goes to that new site of the institution. I even indicated to your colleague, yes, to you, who's also from the former student, clinical nurse practitioner, that probably because I went to West Bank yesterday for simpler private nurses, so they doesn't stop anyone to offer more of those kind of services. From their side, but fellow paper might not be able to do it right now. And also, in the Hex River Bay area, because I hear that we've got three clinics, which is I mentioned before, also the Orchards and also the Sand Hill. We've also got 6 health posts, which is the farmers themselves, they say that it goes sports like that. So if you look at these all clinics, they are far apart. But in between there's an open space, there are lots of the farmers, farms that are there. help the farmers offer to use their own satellite sites for the health post within those kind of areas. Yes, indeed, additionally, I know that they see about 300 patients a day. It's about 7,000 a month. But how do we make it a point that, again, the protocol is very important, so the very important coordination, how do we do the balance? How do we ensure, as I indicated, that in that some of the street clinic, there are times where, you know, the municipality site, actually old clinic house, there are times where even the staff space is being trapped in there. Where the time when I was there, that they are using there at the back, and people sleeping over there, they're homeless and all of them. So that's why we have to make a point that how to ensure that we provide staff services. Yes, term appliances are also in the clinic, but again, for the mobile clinics are on that side. I think I'm done with the part of the premium lady, but indeed, there are a lot of challenges. With the issue of the sister, you know that in this case, it was only 2015, if you recall, 2015, 2016. And we have met with the different stakeholders and so forth. Again, there are about 113 of the cases of the sister in this. It would be unfair to pick up on one case. It would be really unfair. But it doesn't stop to explore outside of this. Then the other thing about, I think the issue of the housing has been responded to. I don't have to go back to that other part of it. But what I wanted also to mention with regard to the COPC. Mamudi, the man said, you know that we were talking about the primary health care. There was a time where we say that we are not giving much as we're supposed to, you know, that it said South African health system philosophy of the KC. But if we ended up not doing purely as a KC, hence therefore the consolidated primary care model, it's back to 1940s, South Africa initiated. And during our time, when I was part of your side, if you recall, Dr. Ivan Tong, the late Ivan Tong, part of the Progressive Primary Master Network, who suggested, as you know, the Ivan Tong Clinic and which is to try to actually to that model to remain. So it helps for us to say we broke back to the basics in terms of the COPC and in real terms to be able to involve the community, including the civil society structures. In the metro, if you go to the NOMZAMO and this where the people are the role players, so in the metro we use it for these four structures. In the Midlands Plain, in that other structure, in the Mamre, at the Atlantis, and also in the Bishop Lady. Just to go there in terms of what is the model vis-a-vis the other. Yes, in other districts, for example, Cape Winelands, the Booster CDC is part of those that are participating, and also in some of the other, Montpellier and Woolly Clinic is part of those. But the main thing is about how do you really, when someone can actually see and feel it, that there is a presence of everyone in that particular space, and also to track everything related to that, and also to use it as a classroom to test. I think someone was asking later previously about how to be going towards universal health coverage. It gives us a way where we can able to use these spaces in regard to part of those. I'm not sure you answered about the issue related to last year about the adolescent mental health service. You answered? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes our first round. Let's give it and back to you. Please give a refer to the page.
Question 4. And I hear what the minister is saying, I hear what the department is saying. If we're talking about a community orientated primary health care approach, what does that say? So a certain group of role players, and one of the MPs has posed a question around the clinic committees and the role they play. Now, if it's a community oriented approach, and I've seen, I've visited some of these sites, and the challenges that the sites face is the role of the community. And so for me, I think, and with the 2030 healthcare plan, where the community plays a critical role of engagement, 10 years down the line, this department still don't have a process in place of including the voice of communities. And the voice of communities in decision-making factors, because the department takes a decision based on a community, but the community doesn't have a say. The community either hears off the facts, or the community hears via social media, or doesn't know about it at all. And I think, Madam Chair, this process is an indication thereof. If we are not part of the mailing list of the portfolio committee that I just realized today, my role in this process is 20 years old. So I'm constantly on the mailing list. Where are the hospital rules? Where are the clinical committees? It should be an indication to the portfolio committee that plays a critical constitutional oversight role, that something needs to happen around community involvement. And my plea on page 34 would be basically to the standing committee of this legislature on health. We cannot go another year with the absence of the community voice. Clinic committees, we come a long way and we haven't really moved, because the department's response to the MPs was that we've done this and we've done that. And a year ago, the same department told the outgoing portfolio committee, I'm glad MP Water is on the committee, because she was the previous chair, that by the end of the previous financial year, training would have started and things would have happened. And we're sitting here a year later, and it has not happened. So the portfolio committee needs to protect the community with the oversight, constitutional oversight role of ensuring community participation. That would be my plea with page 34 and under mental health services, because once again we're talking about the CPOC site in the metro. We hear that four sites, where in the metro are the four sites? Who are the water board serves on these sites? Who are the clinical committee serves on these sites? And is, because the HIV test is not just a health service, so it's an integrated service. Now, would the community not play a critical role in the integrated service that needs to be into a community? Then on page 35, in the first paragraph, I know we've had a challenge around post-mortem being done. So, has the turnaround time improved, and how does communities or families, how are they being notified of the outcome of the results once the post-mortem has been done? Then on page 37, also just around mental health and the community-based service approach, the quality assurance managers in our facilities, do they have a grip on the need of mental health services? Enterprise healthcare facility, as well as level 1 and level 2 facility. So on page 37, we've seen the process that the community health workers had. And my question to the department is, because they now work 8 hours, so it's a partnership,
that are we aware that the minimum conditions are further, and what burden was placed on the facility during this strike. Then on page 39, the result of the client satisfaction survey, was there any recommendation, and has the recommendation been implemented? Then on page 41, our ideal service realization, and if I can remember that ultimately it was part of the ideal clinic outcome. So if our clinic committees are not fully appointed, where are these ideal clinics in the metro or in the province? Then on page 44, provincial policy and legislative changes and the minister's response to the early questions of the MPs with regard to the councillors and MPs. Now I know the amendment to the District House Council Act of 2010 includes councillors and MPs, but the Hospital Facilities Board Act of 2016, there's no mention of MPs on the composition of the local facilities board. So how does the District House Council Act relate to the Western Cape Health Facilities Board Act of 2016 and the powers that the MPs have on the hospital board? Then on page 45, under health promotion and wellness, the 1,000-day initiative, do we have a report on the 1,000 days that was launched? Do we have a change in behavior from the parents' side with regard to children under 5 and the immunization rate for children under 5? And then also with that question, I would like to ask the department, because we hear about COPC and we hear about community-based services, and yet we find that children under 5 are missed when there's a captive 3 patients in the household. So our children under 5 in households, are they being picked up and safe? Then also on page 45, the care for the caregiver. We are aware of the EAP services that the department has for their staff, yet there are staff that are seeking alternatives, and how does the department respond to that. Then on page 49, the patient transfer of folders, and I have a classic example of that. So the hospitals are supposed to pick up the transfer. How are transfers done? Folder transfers done from one facility to another? And the reason for my question is I had an example of this late in last year when my mom was transferred from Mitchell's Plain to Grocery Park. When I went to Glossy Park with my mother, she was refused service access. And I called Mr. Newman, because Mitchell Stein told me, no, you just go to the hospital card, they will pick up everything. When I got to Glossy Park, that was not the case. 3 days later, my mom ended up in Victoria Hospital instead of being seen at Glossy Park Hospital. So for me, it's a critical point of how transfers are done. And if we say the system is working, it is very working, are the staff at our facilities, are they trained? Are they capacitated to understand? Because I went to Mitchell's Plain 3 times for the same thing, and I still got no. I only got the transfer letter a month ago.
So the department needs to explain to us how does that work. Because it is a challenge where people move from one community to the other community. Then on page 65, the last indicator of pneumonia cases, the preventable disease, the children under 5, can the department please explain to us how do we get to solve the amount of children that die of pneumonia?
Judith, if you don't mind, I'm just going to stop you there for now. The reason being is that I just want to test for the other community members as well, whether they have questions. I don't want us to run out of time and they did not have an opportunity as well. So Ms. Lewis, is there anything from your side? Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, it's basically in relation to what the Health Department said. I think here I need to categorically say before...
Excuse me, sir. Sorry that you are you doing a follow-up?
Yes, it's a follow-up
on
my question regarding page 10 as well as page 30.
Okay,
so in relation to the issue of engaging with communities, and you've mentioned that when taking these decisions are taken in terms of closing facilities on different levels. So with that said, there was no community consultation regarding that. But when the protest was underway within Hungary, in our place, there was access to the area. The sister, who is the manager of that facility, engaged with protest leaders whilst the protest was underway. She was not under threat. She sat there, she engaged. The schools remained open. And you see, during the same period, they were protesting the noon, but the noon's day hospital remained open. So why is staff safety a concern for the facility in Outway and not a concern for the facility within the noon? And the protest there over the last 3 years are more or less the same. And I also want to check what you said, because there weren't any protests within Outway in the last 3 years in Hungary. That I can tell you. Because if there's a protest there, I'm either approached to assist in resolving whatever issue it is, or I'm sent to one I'm leading the protest. So I can categorically say there were only four within the last 3 years. And there was only one other instance where the facility closed, and that was where the MSC then came out to the community to engage. So I think the department needs to be honest, and the closure of the facility, Jefferson, is not because of the unrest. It's because the department has failed over the last 8 years to build that polyclinic that the HOD has referred to. Now the same department is using this to fast track the development of this polyclinic or this combining one facility to the disadvantage of us, because our people are sitting without medication, our people don't have access to healthcare, and our people, all people need to be up as early as 5 o'clock in the morning to go and stand in the line. Nobody else can stand in the line for them, because if they're not in the line, they're not going to get shuttled to Lady Taylor, and if they come back at 5 o'clock in the evening after being assisted at Lady Taylor Hospital in France. So I think, again, it comes back to, if we are serious about these engagements, we should be engaging and listening to what the community has to say. And the community has rejected the provisional plan that we've put in place that is also failing us. And if we are talking about saving money and using money wisely as referenced in the minister's input into this annual report, then surely we should be then using the money of the department more effectively and not be outsourcing family planning to CRIC on a Thursday afternoon from 1 to 5 when most women are either in work or they are unable to go and sit there because there's about 10,000 women that need to receive family planning within housing, and I also visit all of them on a Thursday afternoon, once a week. That just doesn't make sense. So for us to move forward from here, we need to ensure that we actually have meaningful engagement, and that whatever decisions are taken within the best interest of the community, and not in the interest of the department, to ensure that they do what they've been failing to do for the last 8 years. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Peterson.
My second question is related to the symptom of whatever that the patient we have to look deep into the symptom, what causes it, and what are the other filters that are there. And it actually takes the time to sit and consult with that particular patient. But we don't have that kind of time to actually give a proper service to the patient. And when you go home, you sit with worry. I didn't do much for the patient. If I had time, I would have done more. And it doesn't only impact on the patient, it impacts on you as well. Because if you love your job, then it affects you.
Thank you very much,
Related to the community involvement and also about what is community. How the educated area, the educated services from the unborn to the oldest, including the deceased. So the stakeholder is in terms of the patient. It means that the community starts from the people that are serving. That's supposed to be the point. However, considering that we will never be able to engage all 6.7 million of the people that we serve, hence the National Health Act makes a provision for the clinical committees and the hospital board, and that they should be 50% of those in each and every structure of those as community members. So the community starts from there, that statutory bodies are those ones who are representing the voice of the community. Because we never be able to engage and talk about policies with the patient who's sitting there in the waiting room. Although ideally we're supposed to be engaging them, but the NHS patient will want only to talk about own illness instead of talking about the whole issue. So it's a must that they should be listening for the hospital board. Indeed, we are going to change the law 2016 where previously, the committee, clinical committees were not part of the legislation, it was only the hospital board. And then also, we have to cluster them because there are more primary health care facilities than the hospital. And I guess it's one of the four hospitals, this is one of the class, and then if I add City of Cape Town Clinic, you get hundreds of those, and they are being clustered. But I think your question is also specific to the one that I mentioned, right, the COPC. Because it's the first time that we are exploring it, so there will always be some hiccups. But what we learn from those is about where the ordinary vaccine committee member might not have phone number or haven't been approached, although that the person will have received the letter of appointment. And also the issue that how, at what extent, if we could have a system in place for district health council or provincial health council to feed back to us through the minutes, but at what extent that now the clinic committee could be able to feed back, or the hospital, that I'm saying that there are fewer, so it's easier for the CEO just to give us the minutes. Hence now we appointed the assistant director for statutory bodies, Mr. Sean St. Yes. So,
so that you know whether a
conversation with them is about how now this person can be able to ensure the story of the rural and also for the metro. And between those two, we have got the community liaison officer. So, which now Sean has to liaise with them in terms of ensure, if now there have been two of the members who are no longer participating, how to make sure that we act out of those members and so forth. Plus also to get some of the crucial decisions or challenges that are happening in those kind of the facilities. So we've done that. In addition, part of the ministry office appointment, we have got the requirement that we have to meet it according to the ministry book, according to the national department presidency in terms of the special obligations for MCs and so forth. But in the Western Cape, some departments, specifically like mine, there was also additional appointment to the Ministry Office of COO, Community Outreach Office, in order to strengthen what you are saying. So it doesn't only that way, we only rely on the clinical staff on the ground to
have a conversation with the community. So, Mr. Jacobs also, some of those, it might be future where you might not necessarily have to engage fiscally with the commissioners themselves. Because, of course, the point of departure, it could be how they could be trying maybe whether to save their skin or they might not necessarily be seen as neutral. But when you send a county outreach officer so that you see in terms of the balance and all of them, so we have done that. Now, specifically the COPC, member D indicated that there is no involvement of whatever all of those. Just a 1 minute chair, just to make an example of the matter of part of the COPC in those areas we have mentioned where we are piloting. In the Bishop Ladies Valhalla Park and Netherlands Clinic cluster, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That's what we are calling for that cluster in August last year. Starting from Mr. Abrams for Faith, David Portman, and all of those, these are the people that are part of that cluster. So the Bishop Clinic cluster is part of the COPC. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, that people have been appointed. With my signature. They are part of the two committees of that cluster. Of course, those of the cluster they might be coming from the different, because I think of 6 clinics plus the AC. So some of them they are part of the future of Cape Town. For the Kailicha and the Eastern cluster, which includes where Nomzamo is part of, there are more of those, because it's a combination of those. So these are the people that have been appointed. In terms of the participation, it might be for the Nomzamo specific, it might not have the whole of that Eastern and other structure still going to be participating, but it might be maybe 2 people from the Ikwezi and whatever from the Nomzamo proper and that are participating in that structure. So they are. Now the question would be, when someone says that, I've already been part of this committee, I've never been consulted. We cannot consult everyone. We have to consult those people that are representative of those. The same thing like in the school. The FGB are the parents who are the children or learners in that school. But now, if now I'm sitting, I'm staying next to that school, and then I hear whatever, I'm closing the school and whatever, at what extent that it is a matter I'm supposed to be consulted? Yes, in terms of that, there should be some kind of consultation, but at what extent that the school can be able to do everyone, if they could be able to specify the first point of reference to consult the parents of those learners. So then apply to us. So the first people of reference is about the clinic committee. And then because they're representatives of that community, does it stop them to come up with a public meeting where they can invite myself or even me, any other staff members? But the kind of reference that has the clinic committee been consulted as the representative of the community. So that's where we are. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The appointment of the NPL, the hospital board. It is section 2A in the board. You asked, you said that in terms of the district council and the others. Section 2A of the new faculty board act that inclusive of the clinic committee. 2A says, in addition to the members appointed in terms of subsection 1, the provincial minister of health may appoint to a board a member of the provincial parliament nominated by the parliamentary committee concerned with health matters. It is part of that. Previously, it was about I can appoint those people when I bounce with the cabinet. And then it was changed that it must be part of this committee that has been endorsed. So, meaning, if now I have to appoint, which is I have appointed any board, just make a point that the clinic committees, they always should be appointed so that we talk about the substructure of that area, in that area, so they can have a conversation among themselves and the committee responds, we don't want to dilute the politician. So what we said previously, now has to change it to that. What we're supposed to do, when we say, let's say a bishop place or Kailicha or whatever substructure, we're done with all the clinic committees, now issue about the training that's going to happen in November. I think it's just a couple of now, once we're done with the capacity building of clinic committees with the hospital board in that substructure, then that's when we say that, okay, now with all these committee members, we'll need to have now the political society through the NPL. Again, remember, ward councillors, they form part of the clinic committee according to the Act.
the MPL, they are not part of the team committees, but they can form part of the board. But we don't want to appoint them before we have done every part in the committee. Then as well now, when I submit the names, I'll say, the chair or the FC, these are the people who, according to the allocation that we have to go to, remember in terms of the constituencies, the allocation, we, each and every party, they allocate constituency heads in those areas. So they will say that there is MPL so and so who is our constituency head in this area. We recommend for their appointment to be part of that hospital board. And then it's up to SC to say yes or no. Like when I was speaking, I would say, member Bank, because you're from Beaufort West. I'm taking an example. So I got to say that member Bank cannot be part of the Beaufort West, well, it is resigned from there. So it makes a submission based on that. When I was saying, remember about the bathroom from the Boran, whatever area, it was extend that you cannot park a road instead of Bosch Hospital. Same applies to Solomon Hospital, so remember that for far. Same applies to Kutros, Siderberg. Let's make an example of those. Same applies to Richard Frey Hospital. So we make those recommendations on the basis once we're done in that layer of the community, and then the rest can follow. So it does accommodate. But remember, it's not necessary, it's mandatory. It's about that, I care. The same applies when the, we get names from the rector, received, to appoint staff who are part of the students in that particular area. It can happen, or it might not happen. But the main thing, community must be 50% in all of those structures, so there is in the board. And then lastly, the reason that we don't appoint individuals. Some might say that I'm very strong, I can do this, but I say that someone must nominate you because it makes you have an obligation to report back to that structure. Whether it's a group of the anti-pregnant women, whether it's an NGO, whether it's whatever, in the past, people who will be residing in Weinberg but become hospital board members in Tigerberg or maybe in Stepland Hospital. Because now I can do everything. No, now we make the appointment, I'm residing in that area. I'm going to play an important role so that when you have to mobilize communities and whatever, or whatever the hospital is, or the public is part of the aspect of that community. So with the member B, in as much as that some of in your forum, they've done this, which is we really appreciate what people have been doing. As you know, that I've been part of that structure as well. Before I came to be a politician. And the ones that were supporting the team protesting against the ministers of Sassimani FYD, all of those. But the main important thing is about some of the things that we used to do then, we need to let it grow. So if you are residing in Bella, the Tigerberg and Northern is the area that might be applicable. That's why I appointed you to it at the Tigerberg Hospital. Well, you can play a big role in Tigerberg International. Appoint anyway. We're a very big group. But at what extent I can appoint you to be board member in Atlantis Westfield? Even if you use your expertise, I cannot. I'm just taking an example. I have to make a point that the people of Mamre Terra and whatever, they should form part of that board. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Manisha. There's a few questions that started to bring up the theme of the questions that so one question was about the protests of the community of workers and the impact on the service. The other question was caring for staff and staff seeking alternative support. Then there was the issue of staff safety and well-being in the outbreak area. Then there was a question about intimidation and risk and psychological stress of a staff in clinics, stress of overload. And the question that the asked was about you go home worrying. We refer to that as moral injury. So we know our staff are under tremendous pressure. That is why the department is investing millions of rands to support staff when they've got post-traumatic stress disorder, and we do have a lot of those happening. And the utilization of those services are there. Given the impact on the staff, I think it's unfortunate if there's a sense that it's just a little bit of unrest here, I'm just a little bit of unrest there.
we have in our emergency medical services, just the fact that one ambulance starts when there is a attack, the fact that that is communicated through the whole family of EMS, everybody's stress levels are up, and you get fear, and you get anxiety, and people get up, go to the work. When they greet their families in the morning, they don't know when they're coming back because of that stress level. So the stress on our staff is extremely high, and we take that very seriously. So the staff well-being is our utmost priority. And whatever we do is make sure that they work under stress environment. We heard about medication not available. Not our own doing. It is something that happens in another space. We know about budget, cuts in budget. We can't appoint more staff. That is something that staff have to deal with. So the stress levels in our services are tremendous. Anything that adds to that has a negative impact on the well-being of our staff members, and we have to take that seriously. In that sense, I absolutely think that we will prioritize the well-being of our staff to make sure that they can render service to the best of the possibilities to the communities who deserve that care. And I want to take that up. So the issue of the overload of the staff is definitely, and we recognize. We visit services consistently to be visible that the staff can know that we are aware of the issue. We went to the courts when the ambulances were attacked, and based on the broader impact of all our staff, three people just by stealing a cell phone went to jail for 12 years because of the injury of the rest of the staff. So it should be naive to think that one impact here doesn't have an impact on the other staff. I would like to go to the more detailed aspects, Madam Chair. The training of the training committees, I've got a full report on the colleague is absolutely right, that we started to look at training of our training committees, and we tested out in the COSA training program, we looked at that, then we tested out the Alternative Trust training program, and ultimately we concluded that training program is more appropriate. It must still be augmented to reflect the Western press situation. So that is happening. We've already trained six people internally who will take the training program forward, and they will be formally start training. So the trial was the few training committees and ask the board to say that what would be the best training program for our context. So that has happened. There was a question about the post-mortems and the turnaround time. If one looks at page 102, the turnaround time has decreased. It has worsened, largely because of the demand and the load has increased. So it is our reality. But the question was, how do you keep the families informed? So our staff are consistently engaging with families to say, where are they, what is the situation, when can they expect the body to be available? That consistently happens because we recognize the trauma of this family already losing the last one, and now having to wait to find complete care. So we recognize that, and there's a very empathetic approach in our services to make sure that we do provide a care while we recognize that there is waiting. It's not ideal. At the stage we're 1 day, 2 days turnaround time, we are about 7 days, and that excludes the bodies that have not been identified. So the pressure is extremely high on that service. There was a question about mental health and mental health capacity in our mental health services, and also in whether our QA managers understand the need for mental health. So we do have non-governmental organizations that are explicitly contracted to render mental health services in our community. That information is in this document, in the section of transfer payments, where we do the transfer funding to those facilities and those NGOs who deliver that service. So the question is whether our staff in our facilities and our hospitals should be more acute to the potential mental health distress of patients and families. Clearly, that commitment is there, and we need to make sure that we really recognize where patients are under stress. The fact that we've got a high load, it's possible that we might miss it, and then we rely on the families to help us to identify, is this patient, this family member, under such pressure that we ask the facility to look at that as well. Because this is a partnership health, it's not the problem of the health department. Health is everybody's business, and I want to make sure that everybody plays their part in that space.
There was the issue of the client satisfaction survey and how do we respond. So the same way that we respond to the ideal clinic findings and also the number of patients findings, we've got a quality improvement plan for every one of those findings to see how do we improve on that factor. So the client satisfaction survey is just one of the feedback mechanisms. We spoke about complaint, and how does that work? So we take each one of those feedbacks. The question was also about clinic committees. The minister responded to that. The question is absolutely correct. If you look at the ideal clinic requirements, one of the indicators is there a functional health committee in place? And that will definitely have an impact on the findings of that survey. Then the report of the first 1,000 days, and the children under 5 are published in households. I would ask the participants just to respond to that because I know there is a lot of effort to, whenever we know that the child is missed, they miss the immunization, there's an immediate connection to the Commission on Work. Please go see what's happened there. Once a baby is born, there's a connection to Community on Work. Go a glucose control visit, is a mother in the role of the breastfeeding, and after that, you come back for immunization. So clearly, that process is there. Dr. Kitty, would you like to speak to first 1,000 days and then also the children that die of pneumonia?
Thank you, Jefferson. Just in terms of the first 1,000 days, because of the importance that we put on it as a program, Mrs. Kivich is asking, do we have a report on it? The learnings that they have, first of all, we have an infection on the report on it, but the learnings that they have for the first 1,000 days has very much moved from us as the health department trying to get the best outcome for children and mothers in the first 1,000 days to us doing it with our sectors. And that is the important learning that we've had in the four learning sites for the whole society. So for instance, in Saldana, what we've learned there, it is about understanding the new mother, the mother that is, or the woman that's pregnant, that will be a new mother coming up. It's about understanding that you pick up the pregnant woman first and you support that woman before she has the baby. But once you have the baby, it's understanding which of those mothers with the new baby is higher at risk than others. Now, remember, the minister came out to the launch when we went from door to door in Saldana. But the issue there is we link with social development so that we have a protocol to say we as a community health worker might enter that home of this newly born baby with the mother. You get to that home and you pick up this quite significant social problem. Part of the protocol there is to say that a social work auxiliary would now be visiting the home to say you make a household test in terms of the social conditions in the home to be able to provide the mother and the baby with the best possible outcome. So there's a whole lot of things that we're learning how to actually have a all that in the wrong program for everyone. And the same is happening in Drakenstein. We also in Drakenstein are enrolling a whole lot of players and partners together to come up with a whole society of works to hold the young mothers, the young babies. So there's a lot of interesting work and exciting work that you can take offline because you can go together around the issue. Part of what is going in the 5-year plan and what is in the priorities for our department is that the first 1,000 days has become one of those key priorities. But it's about us putting it on the agenda. And we work with other sectors. I think the point that this first comes back to, if we are going to do it in the sites where we learn it, and we bring it to the CPC agenda, that becomes a national link, is how do we involve the communities in those areas, that everybody gets a chance to be able to actually do that in a collaborative way. And I think that point about knowing who potentially gets lost, we also can close back with our data system and all of that. So there's lots of exciting things that we can do. But it's really a galvanizing thing for everybody taking hands and taking care for young women and young babies. In terms of the pneumonia case fatality rate, what the figure actually says, if you read it carefully, but I'll just quickly give the context to it, that we thought we were going to have 6,400 cases of pneumonia. What we actually found is we reported on 14,600 cases. So we reported more than double in the Moldavian cases before the certificate. So that is not that we all of a sudden have an outbreak of pneumonia. It is just that we are reporting pneumonia cases more accurately than we've reported them previously. And that's got to do with the coding. As IDDK coding, it's just a technical way of capturing the diagram so that on the system we can recognize more cases. So it's actually a positive thing that we are reporting more cases. Now, because we're reporting more cases, we thought we would have 51 deaths. We are now at 55 deaths, but it's 55 deaths out of a much bigger group of people. Therefore, the rate is much lower than we thought it was going to be. So if you actually take the 4 out of 14,000, it's a much smaller rate than the expected 31 out of 6,000. So that's actually what this issue means here. The issue there is, though, which I think is the case that you make, children dying of pneumonia is still an issue. Like we used to make a big thing out of children dying out of diarrhea. We work with the community health workers, work with that. Children dying of pneumonia is the issue. And therefore, again, when we're going to do things like community oriented primary care, these are the things that should serve because we want to work with so that we make sure that fewer children actually die of pneumonia. But that's the conflict for that specific field.
The question about folders transfers and the point that was raised. Okay, folders remain in the facilities where they are, but folders don't transfer with the patients. The intention is to have electronic systems by which we then have access to those folders, and that is probably the way to go. Yes, we are also moving on electronic discharge notes. So when you discharge from the hospital, the doctor will then complete the discharge note and electronically then go to the facility where you will go to. But that is still a work in progress. So it is not automatic, and we don't have an electronic health record as yet, but that is something we are moving towards. But the principle is that the facility, the folder doesn't leave the facility. In the further question from Mr. Jacobs about Hamburg, clearly your question is more about the now situation, but I can understand where they're coming from. Perhaps Dr. Perez could just explain more on how we provide access, but I know that there is communication out there, we put it in writing, we put it on social media, how is access being provided at the moment, because we recognize patients need access to chronic medication, they need access to a range of services. I just want to point out that we've been looking, we were looking over several years at which sites are available in the outbreak area for us to have a large enough site for a proper community care center for that community. So we've looked for so many facilities over so many years until we settled on saying the Bowling Green from all angles is the best site. We can go to the City of Cape Town, we wrote to them, we made the offer to purchase. The City of Cape Town indicated then, and I'm sure you can do this microphone to the colleague, is that there's a particular tree of the site that must be protected. Then there's a switch line that they have to take us. Then there's a river that must be crossed. So the site is extremely complex, and that has delayed the process of all of our frustration. Every time we want to pull our heads, but that is the reality. These processes unfortunately take longer than what is envisaged. So we do hope that we are in the process of going faster on this, but that is of course not completely in our hands. We work with other stakeholders. So Dr. Perry, that's just at a high level. I don't think we must go in detail yet. Thank you.
Firstly, let's go back to the reasons for in this period, I think when Mr. Jacobs was here earlier when they asked the question, how many times was the project action affect this community? And the answer is that if we look at project action and the violence in the surrounding areas, there's a total of 7 occasions that happened. Mr. Jacobs is correct that only 2 of those resulted in complete closure of the facility, but the remaining 5 were service interruptions, either closing early or starting late because of staff being unable to access the facility. So that's that. In terms of the facility in Hamburg and the facility in Imigamingetu, both facilities are not fit for purpose, both facilities are small, but both facilities can still provide some level of
Thank you very much, Doctor. That's very lovely to hear. Mr. Kibbitz, we will unfortunately use time as to wrap up at this point. I want to encourage the members of the public. The conversation does not stop here. And I think from my side, what I'm taking with is this whole of society approach that is being spoken to. And as much as now it's a 24/7, 365 service rendered to the community, and I think the department and the minister as well was today very honest in saying yes, great strides have been made, but there are areas and there are challenges within the department which they are working on and willing to work on. But also we need the partners within our community sectors as well to come up and step up to the plate in order to work hand in hand with the department to solve these certain issues within our communities. So in actual fact, all of us have a responsibility to see that our services flourish within our province. So with having said that, I want to encourage you to please put your further questions on paper to the committee, where we will then communicate further to the department. Having said that, Minister, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your passion and your hard work in our community. Doctor, to you as well, HOD, thank you so much. The entire team, thank you. I'm not going to repeat what I have said previously, but it is just my prayer that we don't land up in ICU as a health department within this province, and we will have to keep a close eye as to what is evolving in and around our province concerning health services. Thank you to my fellow committee members. You are not excused as yet. We still have a bit of work to do. To the members of the community, thank you very much for coming today, for your valuable and important contributions towards the session today. Thank you very much. We are back at 2 and lunch is served now in the members' lounge for all attendees.